Dave, you know, you mentioned that everybody seems to think the Bears need another pass rusher. Isn't that every team in the league? Like, even when you had your greatest defenses, didn't you always want, like, one more pass rusher? Isn't that sort of standard operating procedure in the NFL?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, that's a position where the pass rushers, you just can't get enough of. It's like corners, you know. I mean, everybody says on defense, it's priority is getting the pass rushers and obviously getting those cover corners. You know, they're the term, and you guys have heard me use it, closers, you know. And
right.
to win games, you got to have closers. And how do you close a game? You got the lead, and the other team's got the ball, and they're going to try to score. Well, if you can't put pressure on the passer, there's a good chance that he's going to move the football and they're going to kick field goals or they're going to score touchdowns. So pass rushers are closers. That's why I think you just can never get enough of the good ones. And that's why they're so scarce. And that's why they're paid the money that they are.
Dave, from a coaching perspective, how surprised were you that Matt Eberflus showed the corner blitz, the nickel blitz, as often as he did against the Bengals? And how much do you think he'll rely upon that to maybe compensate for the lack of a pass rush from that defensive end opposite Montez Sweat?
You know what, David? That's a good question, because I was thinking the same thing. There's one thought that, hey, I want to stop these guys, you know, and the old philosophy of. And I remember going back and forth with Jimmy Johnson on this. We would be sitting there watching games, and I'd say, why? I mean, that's crazy that that guy threw the ball there. The head coach got to tell him that they got the game in hand. And he says, oh, you know, that's all on the head coach, Dave. He says, when you hire good offensive coaches, you're hiring them. All they care about and what they're being paid to do is put the ball in the end zone. And on defense, that's my point. When defensive coordinators, when I was a defense coordinator for 15 years, my job was to keep them out of the end zone. And unless the head coach told me, Dave, I want to cover, I don't want to blitz, I was going to do whatever I had to do. Blitz 5, 6, 7, whatever I had to do to keep them out of the end zone. So I think in a situation like that, that was the defensive coordinator of Flus coming out. What do we got to do to stop them? A head coach, if it was the game is for real and everything, now he's got to decide, do we have the game in hand? Do I want to blitz him and take a chance of a big play and man coverage? Yeah, that's for another day. But I think the defensive coordinator in Flus came out. That's one point. The second point that I like to make on this is, do you remember the biggest thing that turned the defense around last year? We were in the bottom 10 in pressures, Bears defense. When Flus took over the defensive play calling, we ended up in the top 10 in pressures and good results. So I think, you know, it's an indication that, sure, we'd like to get pressure with our four, but if we can't, we're kind of picking up where we left off last year.
Dave, I'm curious, when you think about this time of year, obviously the cut down is a week from today. You got to get to 53 men. Do you already have a good idea of what the team will look like? That last preseason game is fairly meaningless. Is there anybody battling for a position, or does it come down to just being healthy?
Well, the one position that I am uncomfortable with right now, and I'm sure that Matt Eberflus is, and I'm sure that Ryan Poles is that offensive line. I really wanted to see Bates play last week, Ryan Bates, and he doesn't play. And we know about the Davis thing. I'm not going to get into that. You know, who's our starting center? Is Davis going to be a guard, or are we going to put Bates in there at guard? Is Jenkins, you know, we got to do what we got to do with Jenkins. I hope he plays 16 weeks, but he hasn't proven that he can do it yet, guys. And so he makes me nervous. Obviously, Braxton Jones is a guy that's getting better, but is he ready to line up and go against Montez Sweat every game, you know, the premier defensive lineman in the league. So there's, to me, that's the one position that I think this last game could really help the Bears as far as cleaning it up. And I don't know if that answered your question, Molly, but, you know, I started thinking what positions I'm good everywhere else. The defensive line, I'm good. The secondary, I'm good. We know what we're doing receivers. We know what we're doing at tight ends. Running backs in my mind are set. It's that offensive line right now, and it's because of new guys and because of some injuries and because of still some youth that I don't know. I'm just not feeling it yet. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that's fair. You know? And, Dave, they just activated Kieran Amagaji, who is the third-round pick, who's a left tackle. But we don't know how long that ramp-up will take, whether he'd be able to play right away. I mean, clearly he's on the roster. They drafted him. And I just wonder, does that mean you have to keep an extra offensive lineman? Do you have to look at the numbers game in terms of whether he's ready to go on week one?
Yeah, I don't see how this guy's going to be ready to go on week one. I'd stick him in this game, and I may not take him out of the game. If he's healthy, which obviously he is, I'd stick him in there this week and let him play the entire game. And they'll have a very good – we all will. We'll have a very good – idea as far as where he's at from the an ability, maybe not an ability standpoint, because if he didn't have ability, they wouldn't have drafted him, but just from an experience standpoint, maybe that would be it, you know. But yeah, that's going to be a tough one, because they obviously want to keep the guy. Now, whether anybody else would grab him if he was put on the practice squad, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know anything about him before they drafted him, to be honest with you. I'm sure he's a great kid and he's got some upside. Give Ryan Poles credit. I wish, as I said on your show, I wish Flus would have met him in an alley, not on a country club golf course. That would have made me feel better for him. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have an opinion there. You know, I want to see him play. I'd put him in there and let him go the whole game.
So, Dave, obviously we come out of Saturday understandably excited about the explosiveness, the 45-yard completion to Adunze, what we saw from Caleb Williams on the scramble touchdown, all those things. We hear from Shane Waldron yesterday, and he comes across as very competent and more relaxed and composed than maybe the first couple times we heard from him. But offensively overall, even though you feel very good about the quarterback, it's the most important position. How do you think the Bears feel about their running game? Because I still believe that at the end of the day, as they say, when the Bears game plan for the Tennessee Titans, the priority one offensively will be establishing the run so your rookie quarterback has more options and can neutralize a defensive front in whatever way they can by establishing the ground game. And I wonder how you feel about what's ahead for the Bears running game.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to be critical. Hey, throw the ball to score points. But you got to be able to run that ball to close games out, guys. You run the ball to win. You know, I've made the analogy on these shows, on your guys' show, that I was around when Brett Favre was a rookie, and I know what Mike Holmgren did, and I was around when Tom Brady was a rookie. You know, both those instances, it was heavy run at New England with Brady and play action, okay, and some screens. On the other side, Green Bay at the time with Favre was run, and it was screen kings of the world. And Mike Holmgren made the point, the reason I'm throwing tight end screens and fullback screens and wide receiver screens and running back screens, Dave, he said, we were talking in the offseason. He said, I always looked at those for Brent as running plays. And I knew that it was a high percentage play. And if we made 4 yards, that's as good as we might do running the ball, and we could keep the chains moving. So my point is, what the Bears are doing, yeah, we're throwing the ball down the field. We're going to have to score points. I get all that, Bear fans. So don't, you know, but in the same time, when this thing, we start playing for real, lining up and hitting somebody in the mouth and knocking them off the ball, that is going to have to happen. You know, in some form or fashion, we're going to have to move the chains. And I gave you two situations of what other guys have done. You know, I don't know. Is Caleb that much better than these guys? Are we that much more advanced? Are we that much more bold? I don't know where the fine line is, but when this thing starts for real and we get up some of these teams, we're going to have to help Caleb out a little bit more, I think, with the play calling.
Dave, we had an argument earlier discussion about Velus Jones and his role on this team. If he is just a kick returner, is that too much of a specialist, or is that enough if he's got speed to be a member of the team? He's not a punt returner. He's a kick returner. They don't believe he's a wide receiver. They moved him to running back. I don't know if he's a running back. What is your take on Velus Jones with the Bears?
Everything that he's doing at the running back position, our man Scott could do. I believe that. I think they're showcasing him, trying to get him as many looks as possible, trying to get somebody interested in him out there, and they trade him. That's my opinion.
You don't like the idea of him being a hybrid running back wide receiver? You think
I don't. I would go with one of these other guys. I mean, running back, come on. You're going to have Swift. You're going to have Herbert, who's had a very good preseason. And Roschon Johnson's going to be your guy that ponds it up in there. Swift can catch. You can put Swift doing some of that stuff that Velus is doing, or put Scott in there. Or I'd give it to a Dunze. Let him run the reverse. I saw him do it this week. I don't know. I think I just don't see the value. That's just my opinion.
We heard from Jim Miller yesterday, Dave, talk about the mental toughness he has observed from Caleb Williams and talk about how that separated him from maybe some of the predecessors at the position in Chicago, because being the Bears quarterback in Chicago, as you know, requires a thicker skin, a tougher resolve maybe, a personality trait that maybe not everyone has had. What do you think about Caleb Williams' mental toughness that has impressed you, and how important is that in a place like Chicago because of, let's face it, Jim Miller was right. A lot of guys who have come through here didn't have it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say to this point. Now, we haven't played a real game yet, so we got to be careful. You know, I think all those guys that Jim would be referencing, and we all are, I'm on the same page. I think that they felt pretty good and pretty confident at this point. Right before the lights come on for real, but I think the big advantage of Caleb has, guys. You know, I remember a couple first round picks. You know, I mean, Curtis Enos, Rashawn Salaam. I mean, these guys all held out. These guys had nothing until they showed up a week before the first opener. Okay, and I bring this up because Caleb, as a rookie at the quarterback position, they were talking to him about a playbook back in March. Once Ryan Poles came out and said, "You're our guy," I remember how excited I was hearing Caleb's interviews. You know, this was a month before the draft, saying, "Boy, this guy knows that we're going to take him. This guy is excited to be in Chicago. I love everything that he's saying." So even though I don't know what the rules are now, if there are any rules, when he can start talking, I promise you, Caleb Williams was into that playbook, and they were his conversations. I mean, he had a jump on this thing, and he did it with a lot of enthusiasm. So I think he is way ahead of the curve as far as his knowledge and what's expected at the quarterback position. I think that was a big advantage for him, the way he went about it.
So you look at where they're at. We've pretty much seen the preseason. Everything with Caleb Williams, there has been no kind of difficulty. There's been no obstruction at this point. Obviously, that's coming, Dave. Everybody has to face adversity in the National Football League. Every quarterback faces it on a weekly basis. Is this almost going too well? Are you scared at all by the fact that this is so much positivity? It can only go one other way.
I'll say one word: pressure, pressure, pressure. And I'll give you, I remember when Buddy Ryan, before he was down there, I was coaching at the University of Miami, And Buddy came down to work. He was the head coach of the Eagles. He just left the Bears. And I was the assistant defensive coordinator of the Hurricanes then. And he was interested in drafting Jerome Brown, our starting defensive tackle, who he did take, by the way, I think sixth or ninth or whatever he drafted him in the first round. And Buddy came down to Miami, and we were talking, and we were talking about the Bear defense, and then we got into just philosophy. And he said, Dave, let me tell you something. If that quarterback doesn't have a fear every snap, that if he goes back to pass, that he is going to get hit in the mouth, you got no chance on defense. And so my point is, what's going to happen with Caleb and what's the big next step is when we start playing for real and the pressure comes. When the pressure comes on him and he's got to make those same decisions that he's made fantastically, he's got to make the same throws, the same plays, that will be the determining factor, Mully, that we'll be able to say, boy, you know what, this kid is way ahead of the curve. And he's, which is the way I feel right now, and I'm saying it, he's ahead of the curve. But that will be the factor. And I just throw the Buddy Ryan thing out to kind of give you guys an analogy of how I always thought about it. And I think most defensive coaches in the NFL believe that. They truly do. So, you know, yeah, up until the next regular season game, I would just tell the listeners, the fans, I know this is like watching paint dry. Boy, this was the longest time of the NFL season for me. When we got done and we had the last preseason into the opener, it was a long period of time because everybody, coaches, players, fans, you know, all of us in the media, we're all so fired up for that opening kickoff. And how fast can it get here? It never gets there fast enough.
That's great stuff, Dave. We also have Hard Knocks to kind of tide us over a little bit. Episode 3 tonight. I want to ask you this question kind of off the wall related to that. You coached for the Bears. You coach a lot of other places. Much has been made about Hard Knocks lacking profanity because from the top down, George McCaskey has requested that his players watch their mouths and has made it an edict to HBO to not include that as part of the episodes, part of the series. In your experience coaching the Bears, was there any like overt edict from above? Hey, you want to watch your mouth here. Was it much different here than other places? It is a football locker room. It is a football field. People swear. I wondered if it was much different here in your experiences than other places.
Than Dallas? No, I'm kidding. Absolutely not. And trust me on this. I love that. I didn't realize George had said that. But you know what? Hats off to you, George. Because my grandsons that are 10 years old enjoy watching that, okay? So I truly appreciate the way that Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles and George McCaskey and these players are handling this. I think if you're getting the inside of what goes on, but you're getting it in a manner that's good for the sport.
Yeah, David wanted to know if you ever swore, and I told him that you were a daily communicant. You were going to mass for some reason.
I was.
Confession's good for the soul, Dave.
I was like, I'll tell you how I was. No, I won't say this, but when I was coaching with Coach Shula, okay, a quick story. When I was coaching for Coach Shula, and most people don't even realize that he hired me from the University of Miami because I was only with him for 7 weeks. I don't even know if I got a paycheck, but and we were practicing at St. Thomas University in Miami. They right across where our meeting room was, the staff room, there was a chapel. And Coach Shula would go to mass every morning. And keep in mind, he never really got cleaned up, shaved and all that stuff until after he worked out at noon. So the staff meeting would start when he came out of chapel. So we would always have somebody, one of the young coaches, was assigned to like sit there and look out the window. And the minute that he came out of the chapel, he would yell around the building, you know, the boss is coming, the boss is coming. And we'd grab our notepads and we'd all run into the office. Well, it was about a 45-second walk, and he would walk in And he would sit down, and as an example, he was, say he was mad at me for something. He would say, Wanstead, what the uppity, 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 blankety, blankety, blank are you doing? You do that one more blanket. And we would all be looking at each other and saying, 45 seconds from mass to the meeting room. How can that happen that fast? Well, trust me, guys. I've lived it, okay, Molly? So when I came out of St. Mary's up there, yeah. I can appreciate that.
Great stuff, Dave.
We would laugh, and he would have that beard on, and he would be, you know, tough as nails, Coach Shula was, as we know, and that jaw, and he'd be cussing us, and it was a classic. Yeah, damn, there every morning. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
That's great, Dave. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
great
Dave.
Stuff. That's so much fun.
Take care.
Okay, guys.
All right, see you later.
It is professional football.
It is professional football.
But it is nice that it's clean. The family can enjoy it.
Well, I think it's interesting to hear Dave express it that way.
Yeah.
He appreciates it because his 10-year-old grandson's
watching.
That's
good stuff.